Good morning, everyone. My name is Jen Nanny, and I am an alcoholic. Hello. My home group is the Next Frontier Group. We meet every Wednesday at 6:45 off of Shallowford Road here in Chattanooga. So if you are around, please come see us. Now, steps 4 and 5. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestation. Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 64. Another great dividend we may expect from confiding our defects to another human being is humility, a word often misunderstood. To those who have made progress in AA, it amounts to a clear recognition of what and who we really are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. That's the 12 and 12, page 58. It is my honor and privilege to now introduce to you, all the way from Atlanta, Georgia, the Queen, Leslie Strange.
That was an amazing Lord Jesus. Y'all, that's a lot of pressure. And good morning. My name is Leslie Strange. I'm a recovering alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 2nd, 1988. That means I have 36 years of continuous sobriety, a day at a time. And by God's grace and mercy, I've had it one time, one white chip. I came and I remained to stay. And I've grown exponentially. I've grown so much. I got into the rooms when I was 28 years old. I'll be 65 in 2 weeks. I need an aging in recovery book. Who didn't write the book, an aging in recovery? You guys didn't tell us about hot flashes. You didn't tell me about teeth getting pulled. I mean, nobody told me. I had to throw that in there for the senior ladies. I'm honored. Christy, thank you. Thank you. Jen, I looked at her and I said, Jen, you know what? I know you from somewhere. She called me on the phone. I'm driving and she said, are you here yet? I said, no, girl, I'm not here yet. I said, she says, well, I got all your stuff. And I'm like, okay, because I like certain creamer and stuff. And she remembered, I forgot. And then when we get here and she meets me and she walks me down to get my room key and everything and just took such good care of me. And I looked at her and I said, I know you. She said, girl, it's spirit. We've never met. I said, you got a doppelganger or something because you look like somebody I know. So I do know you today. And thank you for your enthusiasm and your willingness to be of service. And you have just made me feel just at home. And I honor and appreciate that. And I really, really love her sponsor because her sponsor and I have talked several times. Jen told me the story and her sponsor told me the story. Diane, wherever you are, so, thank you for being there. And I'm glad I was able to answer the phone. And she complimented me. And she said, what's so funny is a lot of speakers, or what they call circuit speakers. I hate saying that because it sounds arrogant, but speakers, people that go around a lot and stuff, generally, and I've noticed that they may sit separate. Cliff doesn't do that, or Steve doesn't do that, but they sit separate and apart from once they've done the deal, or they may have to jet out and take an early plane, no fault of theirs, and they say, call me, and Diane said, and I've called you several times, and you've always called me back. I said, I did. She said, yeah. I said, I am a miracle because I don't do so good calling back. So thank you for letting me know that I listened to you and we talked and I was able to remember some of our conversation by what she told me. But I've been given the challenge and the charge. Real quick, I'm going to start out with the third step prayer. This earring is going to fight. So third step prayer. And I'm going to say it in a manner that anybody listening to the CD, anybody within the sound of my voice can understand it, because when I first said the third step prayer, when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it didn't make sense. I'm a recovering Catholic. So it turned me off because it had too many thee, thy, those, and theys. I can't. I can't be beseeched forthwith, henceforth. So it was too much. That was hard. I got new teeth. It was hard saying that just now. Pray for me. I'm glad they didn't fly out and hit Chrissy in the eye. But anyway, I'm not scared of you, by the way. So I started saying it in my own way. So if you would just bow your heads and pray, bow your heads and pray with me. God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self so that I can better hear, see, and do thy will. Take away my difficulties, fancied or real, so that once I have victory over said difficulties, then I can be a vessel and a message to those, and I can share with them about your power, your love, and this way of life. In fact, may I be able and willing to do thy will always. Amen, and so it is. So I say it in that manner even today, and I'll add extra little stuff. You know, one thing I started doing with the third step prayers, those of you who are suffering with your children and finances and your job and your boss, I said, why don't you do a third step prayer on said person? So I'll say it like, my God, offer my children to you, Jonathan and Miles, so you can build with them and do with them as you will. Relieve them. And I put, insert them here, insert here. And I do that in all of the difficulties and all the areas of my life that I have to fight for and I'm working on and I can't release and I can't let go of and I'm scared, I'm terrified. Let me explain to you where I come from. I'm a recovering Catholic school girl. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I got sober there in South Central. Didn't live in South Central. I lived 10 minutes outside of Beverly Hills. But something about them people down there, seemed like the harder you fall, the broke you are, the more spiritual you become when you're introduced to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Go get a woman that had 4, 5, 6 kids and on welfare, and that was generational, and she's a little thugette, got a few gunshot wounds, you know, bullet holes. You know, and you go in there and all of a sudden she's transformed into another mother. She's transferred into a sister. She's transferred and transformed into another person. I'm like, how did you come from that? See, because for me, when I came into the rooms, I had those party favors and I never associated that with my alcoholism. I just wanted to learn how to, excuse my language, smoke like a lady. Pinky up, you know? My surrender, it was in degrees. See, I knew something was wrong, but what I really thought was wrong with me, it was my mother. My mother was a tough woman. I'm a 60s, 70s baby. She had the big afro thing, and she'd have all her wigs had names, Donna Summers, Chaka Khan. She had the Cher wig, you know, split in the middle straight. So, you know, my mother, but she was a fashionista, and she worked in the film industry and the post-production in it, and she was the only black woman in there. So she was just this angry chocolate black woman. She had her thigh-high boots on, her sizzlers on, and go to work, and work with all men, and she always had to fight. So I was raised on the fight your way through as a girl. Fight your way through this society and fight these men and fight, fight, fight. And I'm not a fighter. I'm a little girl. I can't fight. I don't have a bunch of sisters and cousins to roll up on you and beat your butt and all that. I didn't have all of that. I couldn't fight. I always got beat up in school. But the alcohol did exactly what it says in the big book. I'm so loving the big book because it put words where I couldn't explain why I felt like I felt, did like what I did, and acted like I acted. I couldn't understand why I would do it when I didn't want to do it. And then when I wanted to do it, I became a scientist. I'd mix things. I'll take this pill. Whatever happened to Quaaludes? I'm just saying. You know, I take, remember, where are those now? I don't know. Anyway, I had them. But, you know, cut one in half. You had the cross in them. Anyway, I'm just saying. So I take one of those, and then I sip a little bit of this, and I never thought that alcohol was a problem. Why? Because it was legal. I couldn't wait to be 21. 21, I get to drink. I get to go out for cocktails with the girls after work. I get to go and have gin gimlets or Long Island iced teas or white Russians, the men too. You know, I had all of those. Don't judge me. I'm non-biased when it comes to color, so. Anyway, so you know what I'm saying? So I try everything. I'd have a girlfriend say, girl, you need to try this new drink. It's called this, that, and the other, and I would try that. And I didn't know anything about being separated from God. I didn't know anything about separation and addiction and the threefold disease. All this stuff you guys gave me, I had no clue. Isn't that what you do in your 20s? You party. I'm out of high school. I'm at my mother's house. She's crazy. She had lupus, so she was always depressed. I'm an adult child. It's me and my younger brother. I'm always taking care of everybody. I'm always making sure everything's good. I'm cooking and ironing at 13 and 14. I'm going to Catholic school, ironing that pleated skirt. I'm hanging out with my friends. And just like Cliff said, by the way, thank you. I love you dearly. And thank you, Vivian. I know her, too. I love you dearly. But when I walk into a room, if you turned your head and looked at me immediately, whatever confidence I thought I had left the room as soon as you looked at me. I think there's not an alcoholic in the rooms and the walls of Alcoholics Anonymous that never had that same feeling we all nod on. It's like, I never fit in. I never felt enough. I wasn't tall enough. I wasn't cute enough. My hair, my afro wouldn't grow big enough, you know, back in the day. My skirts, my legs were skinny. My feet were big. It was just something always was, I'd pick myself apart. I dare not look in the mirror. And this was without alcohol or anything. I was a little girl who would stand in the with a brush in my bedroom with the pink canopy bed and the shag carpet. Remember the rake? You know, the shag carpet and, I'd sing and I'd be one of the Supremes and I'd do that. You know what I'm saying? I was that girl that always pretended to be Diane Carroll or one of those black movie starlets. But I wasn't cute enough. I didn't have a mother that hugged me and kissed me and told me how pretty I was and said every day that you're so pretty, you're my beautiful. See, I had a role. And you know what? I asked my sponsors today, where did you get these ideas from of how a mother's supposed to be, how a father's supposed to be, how a sister or a sibling's supposed to be? Where did you get these ideas from? And most of the time, if you're anything like me, the answer was, I don't know. And usually, if I'm really honest, it was some TV show. It was Claire Huxtable. It was Julia. It was some of the TV shows of the day. I wanted to be Ellie Mae because she was cute, but she was with the animals. I wanted to be one of the Beverly Hills. I wanted to be Green Eggs. I wanted to be Ava Gabor. I wanted to be somebody, but I did not want to be this little black girl that was born in Los Angeles, California, raised in Los Angeles, California. And I went to school, and I graduated from the eighth grade from Catholic school, and I did all the begots and the begets and all of that, and I followed the Ten Commandments. But it was something about me. I felt like if you thunk it, you did it, you're a sinner, you're going to die and go to hell. See, I had that petty God. Oh, you don't want to act right, so I'm going to put a big pimple right here on picture day. That was God to me. Oh, you don't want to act right? I'm going to flood all of Tennessee out, and y'all just going to be swimming. Just look for Noah's Ark. That's the kind of God I had. My mother never talked to me about God. She sent us to Catholic school for education, but I believe also for religious purposes or some kind of good, kind of basic idea of God or whatever. I had the first Holy Communion. I got a confirmation name. I knew how to genuflect. I'd sit in there and smell that good incense. That's probably why I smoked weed. I'm saying that too, because incense in Catholic churches, ooh, that frankincense and myrrh smell good. I was like, ooh. But I couldn't understand why God would treat me so badly, and I didn't think I was such a bad kid. So as I grew up and I got older, I got independent. I got a job at the phone company. That was what my mother taught me. Get a job, Never let a guy buy you a TV because he'll come and take it when he's mad at you. Get you an apartment. Get some benefits. And that's life. So my last one was a little bit like this, and then I'll go into the fourth. By the time I was 28 years old, my job was hanging on the line because I would go out on disability all the time because I just couldn't show up at work. What started out as a one-day, two-day binge, it started to be 4 days and 5 days, and job got in the way of my, so I had to go off on disability on sickness leave. You get three leaves a year, and by the time I'm on 2.5, they say, you know, you come in here and you go on disability one more time and you're going to have to, you know, leave. I had run out of all my friends. By that time, I wasn't going to the club. I wasn't dancing in the Madonna skirts and the Prince parties. I wasn't going to those kind of things anymore because I had become so small and so worthless and feeling so alone. I isolated in my little one-bedroom apartment. I never went to the things I'm used to going to. I stopped going to parties, and I stopped going to clubs, and I stopped going to plays and stuff, the cultural stuff my mother brought us up on. I was just this little bitty broken little girl, 80 pounds. Skin wasn't this color. I was gray and sunken in, hadn't looked in the mirror in forever. Would run a tub of water and would never get in it. Walking around or crawling around on my knees, digging in my trash can, looking for that bottle or that can. And even though they're cigarette butts, anybody drink liquid cigarette butts and ashes? Yeah, that's sexy, huh? A little peppery, but you get over it. You just doing all of that. Not eating for days because it got in the way of my drinking. So my last run, I went to a friend, and he called for a cab to come pick me up and bring me to the motel, because by that time, we're no longer on Sunset drinking. We're now in these little dirt, nasty motels where you don't want to sit on the bed. It's that nasty. And I go in there, and I've got all my little tools and stuff. I mean, he had bought everything. I was set up. Everything, my cigarettes, my alcohol, everything. And Cliff talked a lot about grace. And for some reason, when I first started and I took that first swig and whatever else I did, I didn't get the effect produced by it. I didn't get nothing. Usually it pops off immediately, especially if I've given myself the scientific break. If I give myself a couple of days, when I take that first one, I'm going to feel it, right? You know? And I'd taken a couple of days off, and then he called me and I said, okay, I'm coming, and I take the, and nothing worked. And I think, and I'm just saying because I don't know, I can't remember exactly, but I tried it again. So I said, okay, first I'm going to start slow and I'm going to do it this way. Start with this first, then take the drink. Maybe I'm rushing. I'm trying to hurry up. See, you don't understand, I'm trying to get there. Wherever there is not where here is right now. I want to be there. By my body, mind, and soul, I want to be there. So I took that drink again, and nothing worked. And for a nanosecond, a voice not coming from here. This is the difference that we learn is if we stay around long enough, especially practicing 11, step 11, you pray and meditate so you can have intuitive thoughts, words, and actions. And so I didn't have that, but for a nanosecond, it didn't come from here. It came from around here somewhere, that space where your ribs split open. I always think of that as where my soul lies, right? My spirit, my gut, my instincts, right there. And something said to me, go home. And right then, because, see, I know how to fast forward how this, I know how this movie's going to end. I'm going to be depressed, I'm going to be crying, I'm going to be laying in bed, and I'm going to be broke. One more time. And I wanted to get there, and it said go home, and I guess that window of grace cracked. Cliff, it cracked open. See, I don't know that until I get later into the steps, but it cracked open, and for whatever reason, I hadn't planned on surrendering, I scooted over into it, and I told him, call me a cab, and I went home. That was the beginning of my recovery. Didn't know it. I just knew I was tired. Are you tired? Are you exhausted? Are you done? I'm tired. And I know sometimes we get into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and we have this thing with higher power to make it easy for the newcomer and all that stuff. But when I'm tired and I'm beat and I got a well-whipped one, it's straight, God, help me. I'm not trying to sit up here and say, Buddha, help me, or Jehovah. God, please help me. And I guess he heard me. See, somebody told me early on that in my recovery that God is a gentleman or gentlewoman. They don't come where they're not wanted, and they don't stay where they're not asked. Something I've learned about the God idea is that God is not anything. Erase all things that you think you know about God. It's all-encompassing, all-inclusive. It's huge. It's bigger than I can imagine. It's the impossible. It's the miracle. It's the miraculous. It's the what? All of that. So I get into the rooms and I start hanging out with you guys, and you guys remembered my name from the first meeting. You were like, hey, Leslie, that's you. You're back. All right. And you clapped for me. You clapped, excuse me, but you clapped because I got my ass whooped. You're like, yay. Okay. And then I heard you talk from the podium. So, you know, as I got further into this, and I don't sponsor HOP, so I've had two major sponsors through my entire recovery. First was Brenda M. from Los Angeles, California. She moved, and I left and went to Germany because I found a boy. Within the first year, I did exactly what you told me not to. He had a size 14 feet and foot, and he was cute and black. So shut up. I went with him. Don't judge me. And stop looking at feet, ladies. Sometimes they lie. Anyway. Ralph's going to hear this tape and he's going to say, see, that's why I can't let you go nowhere by yourself. I know he's going to say, he always says, I can't let you go nowhere. I'm like, I know. Sorry. Not sorry. Anyway. And then I missed her until we split. I stayed in Germany because he went into the army. I was there for about 3 years during Desert Storm. The way to save me after I had done my first inventory before I left. I knew I had to get it done because back in the day, it was almost like in high school, you know, you have that competitive friend. She got an A. I got to get an A. Well, it was like that. You ain't going to out-four-step me. I got to get my four-step in, too. Where you at? I just did a fifth. Oh, wait a minute. Let me hurry up. It was one of those fun kind of competitions in my home groups, you know. And my home groups, I said more than one because we rolled in. We were like a bunch of cows. That's the men, too, and bulls. We went from one meeting to another together, and they'd tell me where a meeting was at noon, and I'd go there. You guys kept me so busy, I don't even know when the obsession leave. But I was, when the obsession left, but I was so happy to have somewhere to get dressed and go to. I've always been extra. I dressed up. I just would have to put on two pair of leggings, you know what I'm saying, and big sweatshirts. But I always made sure my face was on, wig, whatever it was. Because you made me want to come back. Hi, pretty lady. So I got with my sponsor's best friend, Gail, and I did my inventory. And now I'm going to just talk about what's real for me in the fourth step. See, what I found out as I stayed around here is I have a double two-way block. I'm spiritually constipated. Cliff, you took my enema. I'm going to talk about that too. But I'm spiritually constipated. Because I have a separation from both the universe or God. You'll hear me say several things referencing God. So insert name here. The universe, the one with no name, something, it. And you all know what my latest name for God is? Suddenly. See, you get those kind of fires. I get those kind of fires when I sit still and I meditate. I was like, oh, suddenly it's kind of sad. And then, you know, God was broken. And then suddenly I looked at my bank account. You know, it's that kind of stuff. It's beautiful with the suddenlies. Or when I'm in desperation and I'm all focused on me, and all of a sudden a sponsor calls me, and then suddenly I don't think about me no more. All of a sudden I feel like, ooh, somebody need me. And they told me to step one and two are conclusions through my own life, through my own experiential ups and downs, the skid marks, the knee marks. I'm going to tear down something. I'm going to hurt some things. And I was reading, me and my sponsees and I meet every Thursday, and we were reading A New Pair of Glasses. And Chuck C. said something that real profound. He said, don't beat yourself up for choices. Don't condemn yourself for choices. If you're doing some stuff that's against the grain or against the principles, do it in here. Do it in here, because not only did I come in here hitting the bottom on alcohol and other mind-altering substances, I also came in here and hit bottoms on a whole bunch of other defects and shortcomings. I hit bottoms on fear. In fact, fear is with me right now, every day. I was just telling my friend Terry, my baby, my godson, I call him, I'm so full of fear even today that when I don't have any money, I'm terrified. I'm a homeowner. My head has me homeless, living up under a freeway. And I'm sitting in my house with the house note paid and nobody at the door. My head takes me without my permission. Fear, the corroding thread. But then if I get some money, I'm terrified that I'm going to spend it too quick. You know, I'm never satisfied. Girl, don't let me get on Sheen or one of them. Oh, my God. And I always promise to do it different. So I'm going to talk about alcohol. So they told me one and two, Leslie, are just conclusions. Are you? I didn't know what life unmanageable meant. I just knew I just took the first half. That's good. Because I conceded to my innermost self there was a problem. Step before step one. Step two, are you insane when it comes to King alcohol? Well, what do you mean by insane? You just lay down with four or five different guys. I'm going to be honest because I'm not scared of y'all. And then all of a sudden I stop drinking long enough to say, what did I do last weekend? And I remember some of it. But I go back and do it again? Why am I hurting myself? Why am I doing this to myself? Why am I feel? I know the results. See, knowledge is not enough. I know what's going to happen. But I lost control somewhere down the line. I turned into a pickle somewhere. I like to say, can you untoast toast? I was toasted. I can't make. You know, I try to think of different metaphors because y'all done used the pickle and the cucumber. So I'm just going to say, can you make a piece of bread, toasted bread, toast again, or bread? You know what I mean. Figure it out. This is water, by the way. I'm not drunk. I'm insane when it comes to making decisions. I'm insane because I never consult anybody. I just come up with my magic magnifying mind. And one of the stories in the back of the book, I love the name he describes, my magic magnifying mind. I make up scary stories and scare the hell out myself. And the third step someone taught me was this. Two conclusions and one decision. Turn my thinking and my actions over to. I said, wait a minute, I didn't think of it like that. They said, all they're saying is you turn your thinking and your actions over to the care of God, wherever that God is, level you on, if you all spiritual and all that, if you're not, and you know, because I separated from God a long time ago. Catholic school was too rigid, too much henceforth and smiting. I was smithed to the highest level of smithivity. I was over smithed. I was crucified next to Christ. You see Christ and you see me. Just like the, it was just both of us. I'm like, well, damn, if he did that to his own son, he don't give a damn about me. And they asked me a simple question. Oh, I started doing the book studies, but they said, are you willing to turn your thinking and your action over to the care of, insert here, I say God, as you understand, insert here, God. And then I started listening to some lady named Abraham Hicks. I don't know if you guys know her, but I started listening to her, and she said, if you turn your thinking action over to the care of God, you don't have to care. And the stuff that you need to take care of and handle, which is your own insanity, then turn, work on that. God got the rest. But I seem to forget all the time that I'm in a vow. I'm in a commitment. I tell people the third step prayer is a commitment. It is a marriage. It is a vow. I promised God. I said that. But I can't keep that even today. But the reason I have a sponsor, because I'll call her with my fears. I just called her last week. See, I'm one of those alcoholic speakers that'll tell you about what's going on with me right now. I got so scared about money and not having enough, and I got a bunch of money sitting up here, and I don't know whether to invest it. I'm not doing Bitcoin because I'm too scary and too old. Where do I put this, and should I sell my house? Should I keep it? I want to move to Thailand. Do I do the hokey pokey and turn myself around? I don't know what to do. You know, I'm going to run out of this money. And she says, Leslie, stop. She said, don't you remember that you said you were going to turn your thinking and actions over to the care of God? I was like, oh, yeah, huh? What does that look like for the newcomer? Turning my thinking and my action. I tell all my girls, my relationship with the ladies I sponsor is as tight as you make it. See, my con sponsor didn't have to keep telling me to call her. Baby, I picked up that phone because I became, they told me that my disease centered in my thinking, and I'm so afraid of my thinking, I became so willing to, wait a minute, do I part my hair on this side or do I part my hair on that side? It was really almost that silly. She said, don't cut, she was a psych nurse. She said, don't cut your hair and when you're depressed. And it was things that was a little outside of the book, but it's like, no, because then you're a girl and you are, you know, and you don't look cute, and now you're even feeling worse, and you can't even take a drink because you're crazy. But what I found out is there's a block. There has been a block place. I have taken cinder blocks and blocked myself from people. I'm not messing with them no more. They talked about me. I don't like my mom because she tells everybody my business. My little brother's a pain in the butt. The job is out to get me. It was always everybody. And you know what's amazing? In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk about the psychopath. I love that. See, I like scary movies anyway. But they talk about the psychopath. So one day I was reading this book, and Betty T had a lot of time. She was a sponsor after Brenda. And I called her. I said, wait a minute. The psychopath is what? She said, the psychopath is a person that doesn't believe that they have anything to do with anything. It's everybody else's fault. They're never able to admit their part or their faults. And I thought about it. I said, well, wait a minute. Isn't that what alcoholics have a tendency to do? And she said, in her Betty Boop voice, she go, yes, baby. I said, wait a minute. So does that mean you're a psychopath? And she said, yes. I said, does that mean I'm a psychopath? She said, yes. I said, oh, my God. See, it's on a scale. You know what I'm saying? It's on a scale. So the psychopaths, maybe we're not John Wayne Gacy's. Some of us might be. We're bodies under the house. But there's a scale. I know that was gross. There's a scale of psychopathic behavior. Always wanting to blame someone else. So she said, baby, first of all, you're blocked. The reason why when you pray to God and God doesn't answer because you've given God a script, just like the actor, God, you're supposed to do this. That's what they taught me. You pray and ask God to save your grandmother from dying, and she dies anyway, so you don't believe God because you have a misconception of God. And then you got a separation from people. So you're building these blocks, and you've blocked yourself in from anything coming in, whether it's advice from human beings or it's from the divine. You have blocked yourself. You have locked yourself down. And when you're separate and apart from the power of alcoholism, because that power did work, baby, at first, and you're not putting in anything into your body, you're going to have a substitute. And the real deal is God. I said, so what do I need to do? She says, first of all, I need you to bend over so we can give you the spiritual enema called steps 4 through 9. It's all spiritual constipation. I said, So she said, because we need to see what it is. We need the causes and the conditions as to why you behave like you do, why you're such an agnostic. She said, baby, let me tell you something. You better hit your agnostic knees and ask God for a miracle because you're hopeless. You could die for the rest of your life in this area. I mean, we all going to die. She would say it so strong to me. We're all going to die, but don't you want to extend and expand your life? So she said, you pick up that pen with your agnostic temperament and you write exactly what I tell you to do. This says in the book, resentment is my number one offender. I'd like to say it was fear, but I'll talk to Bill later about that. But resentment is our number one offender because resentment is nothing more than anger, Leslie, and anger is nothing more than fear flipped. I said, oh. And for the girls that I sponsor, when they say, well, I don't have very many resentments, I say, well, if you go to the page and you go up to the top of page 65, it says, were you hurt or threatened? Let's put down the people that hurt you. See, I forget. I get to write for three columns. I get to write about all the things that hurt me, all the people who did something to me, fancied or real. Because no matter how I put it, I need to look at it. The most painful parts, the humbling parts. Fourth step and fifth step are spiritual kale. It don't taste good, but it's good for the soul. Humility doesn't feel good. Humility comes from the word humus or hummus, and it means dirt. And if you lower yourself, a humble position is to prostrate yourself and lay yourself wide open to God and say, God, I have no answer. Flat face, all four down. I'm done. Show me. But the amazing thing about four and five is they said I was beyond human aid. I tried psychiatrists. I tried the gym. I tried doing the hokey pokey. I tried Nam-myoho-renge-kyo. I tried everything. None of it worked. But it's so funny, the oxymoron to that, and there's two things that can be true at the same time. I'm beyond human aid, but I need somebody to guide me through this self-cleaning, self-assessing process. So now I got to get a damn sponsor. She said, you need to write all your resentment down, and I'm not going to do the mechanics on it. You figure out. Everybody does it different. No, that ain't no on my part. See, I don't get into all of that. Not over this type of thing. If it's one-on-one, we'll talk about it. The bottom line is to get to the point. Where were you fearful? Now let me share with you what I discovered in the fourth step. They say in the fear inventory after the resentment inventory, and they give you clear-cut directions on how to write it, they said fear is like a corroding thread. Now, I don't know if you guys knit or do needlepoint or, no, you don't? Okay. Have you ever sewed anything, sir? He's like, no, I don't do none of that. I just give it to my wife. Anyway, it's not on tape in my mouth. It's a corroding thread. Let's talk about fishing then. Now, you know that, huh? Uh-huh. You know, roping and cowboying. Anyway, if it's corroding, it'll break apart. But fear is like a corroding thread, and our lives are shot through with it. So one day in my meditative state of mind, third column, there's seven areas Bill mentions. Was it my self-esteem, my ambitions, my personal relations, my sex relations, my ego and pride, and there's something on my money? My sponsor, she said, baby, every time that the third column, any effects happen to you in the third column, it's all fear-based. So what I couldn't understand that. So she said, let me give you an example. And, you know, it's meant to be suggestive only. So she shifted for me because I'm slow. I'm smart, but I can be slow. She said, baby, if it affects your self-esteem, write it out. How it affected, one sentence, you're going to talk it through in the fifth. You don't have to write an essay. It's an outline. That's all the fourth step is. I said, shut the front door. I was getting ready to do a whole essay. She said, no, just we ain't got time for that. You need to hurry up before you die. So she said, self-esteem. She said, now what's the fear in that? She said, now put fear under that. This is how she broke it down for me so I could understand it. What's the fear if my self-esteem is affected because he's looking at her longer than me? Well, the fear is that nobody will like me. So she said, another one. How is your pocketbooks affected? Well, my pocketbooks are affected, and another resentment, because I'll run out of money. What's the fear in running out of money? I'll be broken, homeless. So when she broke it down for me, listen to me carefully. So all of those effects, however your sponsor does it for you, but this is what happened for me. I started seeing fear behind every single effect in my third column or whatever. I started seeing how fear was all up in that. So you say resentment is anger, is fear. Then the third column, these effects, they're all manifested with fear. And then the fourth column mentions fear. And then you tell me to do a whole fear inventory that may not be related to any resentments. I'm like, damn. Right? I write down all these fears that have nothing to do with nothing. So she started taking something like this. I have two boys, a 25 and a 35-year-old. They're great kids. They're not in the rooms yet. Please, God, no. They've never been arrested. You know, for two black men, African-American men ain't never been in jail. I'm going to say it. I'm black. So you know what I'm saying? That's a miracle. Yeah, I said it. That's why I wore bright colors, because the fourth step's so depressing. But I'm going to make it fun. Anyway, I have these two boys that I raised in the rooms, and I was married twice, so they both are, you know, two different fathers. And with my two babies, I take this fear thing. See, we alcoholics like to trademark stuff. We ain't the only ones suffering from fear. We're not the only ones that's completely in denial about stuff. We're not the only ones. You know, the whole world could do an inventory if it was up to me. But I teach my boys these things. And so when I talk to them about fears, I tell them to write me a fear inventory. What are you scared of? And I do that with my sponsees, and because it was done for me. And one of my fears has always been, even during the pandemic, this is the biggest one. I'm in the house by myself. I have a house in Atlanta. Ralph lives in L.A. Couldn't visit anybody. Nobody could visit me. I got scared because I was like, how long is this going to be? I got terrified, so I jumped on Zoom. I was zooming. I was zooming like I was on acid. I was zooming, baby. I was zooming, speaking 3-4 times a day. My calendar was ridiculous because you guys taught me enough to say, don't be in your head by yourself too long because, baby, this thing right here, this magic, baby, all of a sudden I'm married to Denzel. He's leaving me for somebody else. I mean, my head goes way left. But I've taught my boys that fear can be fought, or you can use the tools of gratitude, not a weapon. See, weapons become tools now. I said, when you're afraid, write a gratitude list. So what I was just telling some ladies, so I have them, I'll text them a gratitude list, tag y'all it, and they'll both send me a gratitude list. And do you understand from some non-alcoholic children, they give the best gratitude list. Sometimes I post them on Facebook, I'm so happy. Fear is a corroding thread. It ruins everything for me. So I do a fear inventory. And during the pandemic, I was in the house by myself. Here's my point. And so I was afraid. And so I put down, I'm afraid that I won't be able to pay my house note. What's the fear in that? That they'll take my house. Okay, so check this out. Somebody said, and then what? Then I'll be homeless. And then what? Then I'll be living under a bridge. And then what? Then I'll get drunk or high, and then what? And then I'll die. And then what? Nobody will remember me? And then what? I don't know. So if I started looking at all my fears that way, I'm going to give you a new perspective. This is how I think about it. I look at all my fears, and I do the and then what as I'm praying and meditating later on. All my fears end up with me dying. Even if it's about my kids ending up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then what? Well, they'll start getting loaded and have this disease because it's inherited. And then what? And then they'll have to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then what? And then I'll be nervous and upset. And then what? See how it shifted from them to me? I'll be nervous and upset and embarrassed because my kids are... See, page 62, let me take you back a little bit. On page 62, the first two paragraphs, fact check me, first two paragraphs, they have 11 forms of self in the first two paragraphs on page 62. Ourselves, self-pity, self-centeredness, selfishness, all these forms of self. And you sit down and count them all, guaranteed you'll find 11. If you didn't, recount. That was another thing that came up during my quiet time in prayer and meditation. I discovered that. I started telling everybody. You know how alcoholic is. I found the clue. Let me tell you, Eureka, I found gold. You know what I'm saying? And I tell everybody. And so now I'm in my fear inventory, and I'm going through all these fears, and I look at myself, and I go, but right now I'm sitting in my house, and everything's paid. So what I've done is future tripped. And I've gone way somewhere. See, I like to think of it like this. Where I am right now at 18 minutes after the hour, where I am right now, right here, right now, there is God. Now, I'm not saying he wasn't here a minute ago at 11:17. And I'm not saying he ain't going to be here on 11:19. But I know he right here at 11:18. And a lot of times, even with my well, fine-tuned state of mind, I can't stay in the right now. See, because when I go ahead of myself because of my fears, I'll end up in God's territory, and that ain't my business. I'm supposed to turn my thinking and actions over to care of him and handle what I'm supposed to do. Maybe I can meditate right now. Maybe I can reach out to somebody right now. Maybe I got a 10th step that's sitting there dangling in the wind. Maybe I got some other things I need to be doing, but I can handle that. God, take care of me right now. He's never not done it. I love the part in the 12 and 12 that talks about don't pray specific prayers because you too green and too new and you too novice. Don't do that even with 36 years. Don't. But if you have to, because Bill knew, yeah, I'm telling you don't do it. But if you have to, please add the tagline, if it's thy will. And what's more importantly for me, can I accept the will that comes down the pipe? That's my hard thing, is acceptance of his will. Stuff ain't going to come out the way I think. And I don't understand why he won't allow me. You know, the world teaches me to think on it and I can make it manifest. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. We're bodily and mentally different from them people in them churches and those places that can read the book, think and grow rich and do it. No, I think and grow rich and I end up relapsing because I got some money and a cute boy said hi. I'm done. My fears are my devil. And my sponsor, I called my sponsor. So I went from Betty T. She died in 2016. I was with her for 26 years. My mother died in 2017 on Mother's Day that year. The first sponsor I had, Brenda, I was so shook, I flew back to L.A. because she was in a boarding care there. My mother had dementia at the end. And Brenda drove me around that whole day to take care of business. And I looked over, and we always stayed in touch, and I looked at her because, see, I can't go unsponsored. I'm not well enough to go unsponsored. She knows all of everything about me. One time, let me tell you a real example, good example. One time I called her about a year ago, and I said, Brenda, I got a story to tell you. Did I ever tell you about something that's pretty egregious that I did? She said, no, what is it, baby? And I told her, I ain't telling y'all, so don't even ask. I said, so what do I do? Do I need to go make amends? Do I need to write about it? Do I need to pray? What do I need to do? She said, no, nothing. I said, are you sure? She said, no, you did what you were supposed to do just now. I even get the fringe stuff that pops up because it's an onion peel. It's peels and layers, and you remember stuff you did, and you go, oh, wow, and I call my sponsor. That's how cooperative I am because I don't want to die drunk. Then they talk about sex. I know y'all was waiting for that. Bill gonna say we all need an overhaul. I need a whole brand new transmission and an engine. I need a new car. No, not a new car, because I'll ruin that too. You know what I'm saying? How many times did I use my body and my looks and my whatever as currency? I gave out coochie coupons. You want one? You get some, and you get some. Shut up, I said it. Whoever hears it on the tape, yeah. I didn't cuss, though. I did good. I'm not your normal circuit speaker, and I'm not talking, and I'm not doing the hand fold, you know, check them out, they do this, and, you know, I don't do that. I'm Leslie Strange. Figure that out. I married that name. I got rid of him, but I like the last name. Like Cliff said, I'm terminally unique, so if you know Leslie Strange, I want everybody to remember me, damn it. I'm not going to act like it. I don't want it. Sex inventory goes deep. I thought I was going to say, did you hang from the chandelier? Did you do it outside? Did you let the 18-wheelers drive by and look? No, it didn't ask me how, when, and who, and how many. What it does is ask me about my moral character in intimate relationships. You know what's amazing to me? I'm just going to give you a little something to go, You know what? I had to do a sex inventory on both my children and my mom and my ex-husband. Well, now you say, wait a minute. You mean to tell me you're ancestral? No, they're just questions. And I kept running into repeated walls, and I couldn't let go of certain things. And my sponsor says, baby, take them through the sex inventory. All it is about my moral conduct. I had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but I could never live up to them. So it says, where did I cause jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness? Let me give you an example. If I meet a guy, and I'm like Cliff said, if I meet a guy and my kids are in the bed and he's not answering the pager or the phone, yeah, I go back that old, and he's not answering the phone, I'm going to turn off the lights, make sure they're asleep, put on my, am I the only girl that did drive-bys back in the day? Some of y'all doing them, somebody do some. Thank you, I like a couple of y'all, you know, and I go in there because he's not answering the phone because my fear and less thanism settles in, and I already suffer from low self-esteem, so that means you don't want me. And of course, my sponsor says, if you play Inspector Clouseau, you're always going to find something. So all y'all scrolling through your ex's Facebook pages, keep doing it. Looking at his Instagram, but acting like you didn't. Lying to your sponsor saying that you ain't texting him, you blocked him, but you're blocking and you're unblocking, and you're blocking and you're unblocking and you're blocking. Wait a minute. You know what I learned on the discipline of that, on a relationship that goes south? I don't block and I don't do none of that. I just pray for the power from God not to answer. Let me tell you what I did one time with my ex-husband. He was kind of messing around and stuff, and he was always on the road because he had a job where he went on the road. And I got access to his code. Shut up. And I would call his answering machine on his cell phone, and I'd listen to the messages, and he never thought the difference because I delete them because he wouldn't know that they were already heard. And, hey, boo, when you guys coming back to Texas? Me and my girl Shaquisha or whatever. You know, we want to see you and all that other kind of stuff. And I kept listening to him, and I kept listening to him, and I kept listening to him. And each time I listen to him, it's like I'm stabbing myself. I'm committing Harry Carey. I'm, oh, my God, I'm sick. But I can't tell him because there's part of me that still wants to hear it. But then there's part of me says I shouldn't. And if I tell him, he's going to, of course, do the gaslight and flip it on me. Why are you in my stuff? You know what I'm saying? And I kept doing until one day I eventually gave up and I called my sponsor, Betty T, at the time. I said, Betty, I've been listening to his voicemails and I hear all these different girls and stuff on there. And you know what she said to me? She said, well, baby, how many times a day do you listen to the voicemails? I lied and said two. I'm at work. Okay, ain't no new ones. You know, she knew that. She said, I said, Betty, what am I going to do? How do I do this? You know, I don't have the discipline to stop. I can't stay stopped. I can't stay stopped doing anything without willingness and surrender first. So I have to hit bottom. And then maybe God can do something with me. And she said, baby, what I want you to do is this. I want you to keep calling the number. If you call him two, make it 10 times a day. I said, why would you tell me to do that? I thought you were going to give me some kind of solution, some kind of mechanical, something to do, prayer beads or something. She said, no, baby, I want you to do it until you're tired. And then when you hit bottom, we can begin to recover. Whoo. That hit me so deep. I had been sober for a while. I had double digits. So I called him one day, a couple days later, and I said, you need to change your passcode because I've been listening to your voicemails. And he did exactly what I knew he was going to do. And I had to take that. See, Chuck says something that's, be willing to take the consequences when you are sober-minded and you consciously decide to go against spiritual principles. Stand on that. Like the kids say now, stand on it 10 toes down. You better stand on that. And you don't condemn yourself. Just go on and make the whatever mistake. And guess what? In spite of all the things I did contrary to the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter how long it took me to do a fourth because I hadn't been doing 10, no matter how many times I barely made it through something, no matter how many times I'm disobedient to my sponsor, the only thing that has kept me sober in those times, the only thing, the one and only thing that can keep me sober when I'm not in order, grace. I didn't do anything. I can't buy grace. I can't dress for grace. I can't bargain for grace. I can't swap me. I can't pawn nothing for grace. There's nothing I can do. So it's the grace that keeps me on the in-betweens when I'm out of order, or I'm off-centered, and I'm off-balance. When my sex conduct is so horrible, I remember when I was trying to fix, that was the thing I was trying to fix on. By all rights, I should have been loaded. Because on page 69, where the sex inventory is, /70, it says, your behavior continues to harm others. You will drink again. He says, well, that's a theory. That's what some people, that's what some people believe. However, if you continue to do it and you're not sorry, you do it with impunity, like, I don't give a. And you hurting people. I see some stuff going on right now. These Zoom love affairs are killing me. They making my nerves bad. All of a sudden, he's in Indiana, she's in Oklahoma or somewhere. They get together, they in love. And then he's flying over here to see this girl, and he's going over to. And then it all comes back to their home group on Zoom, and it's an explosion. And then the sponsor is calling me crying. And all I can do, because I knew who he was, and all I can do is say, baby, let's finish that sex inventory. And what's so cold and amazing about the sex inventory, and I only got a few minutes to get to 5, what's so cold and amazing about the sex conduct inventory is I took those kids, I took that mother. Where did I cause jealousy, suspicion? Jealousy, suspicion, when I tell the kids I'm going to take them to Six Flags or Disneyland, but because he said he wanted to take me to dinner, I cancel on my children to go hang out with him. I leave my children alone at risk, they're underage, to go do a drive-by. They don't know it, but the universe is watching. I'm accountable. Same with my mom, same with other things. If you knew, don't go by that. Just do what your sponsor say. Delete everything I just said, do what your sponsor says. But this is what has gotten me to the successful ability to be able to admit my faults faster and easier, because I've learned that if I keep it close to me and don't tell my sponsor I'm risking, I'm putting myself more in the risk of relapse, and I'm scared of that. That's a good fear. See, because as I do the scrubbing like a toilet, the scrubbing and then the flush and then the scrub and the flush, that's 4 through 9. The scrub and the flush, that's 10, which is nothing more than 4 through 9. The scrub and the flush, and the scrub and the flush, just like the water in a toilet, it fills back up. Therein lies my defects and my shortcomings. And somebody's going to talk to you about 6 and 7. My defects and shortcomings and my fears is something that's going to be with me forever, because the ego likes to use my defects as weapons. Because each one, fear is the food. This is what Betty told me. Fear is the food that feeds my resentments. Fear is the food that feeds my effects. Fear is the food that kills me. And when we have warped natural instincts, because fear is one God gave us all to protect us. You know, I'm going to say this real quick. Recently, I've been talking to my sponsees about what is the purpose of the ego. I don't want to go too deep on y'all. Y'all can handle it. Because we all deal with ego problems. The ego done got kind of a bad name because we've gotten broken so much that the ego edging God out. No, the purpose of the ego, I don't know about you guys, they have this leveler. We used to have a pool table when I was a kid, and you put that leveler in the bubbles in the middle, Steve. It's a leveler to make you, you know, the purpose of the ego. So I Googled it, because I like to research stuff. Yeah, I try with the intellectual yet, and I pray that it sprinkles down into my soul space. And the ego's supposed to help you make sound decisions. But if you're defective and you're warped in your defects, I mean, in your natural instincts, of course the ego's out of balance. So when I do all this work, I accumulate all this work, I've put everything down that I can, and I've done so many inventories, I can't even count. Now it's gotten so sexy. What started out with 367 resentments, now it's down to like one. Sometimes a fourth step has to be done because the tenth's not enough, or I may have sat on it too long, or whatever it is. And throughout everything, I always ask my sponsor, what do I do now? Am I okay now? You have time for me to read this to you? I just had a resentment with a girl that did something to me, and I felt really, really just disrespected. And I could be right, but I don't want to take the chance of being right and being wrong. It's not about them changing. It's about me having a transformation because I've swept the space in my heart. I knocked down some of those cinder block bricks that I built around me as a fortress. And now I can look you in the eye and say, Chrissy, I love you, and really mean it from the heart. Now I can look at Tish and say, Tish, can you meet me down in Tennessee, baby? I need to spend some one-on-one time. I get to have you to myself, sponsor. Yes, I. Come on, baby. See, I'm breaking down the wall. So now I have a connection with you. And I'm connected here. How dare I say I love them, him, they. And I can't stand that girl that runs that Wednesday night meeting. Now, I ain't got to go fishing with her. And I ain't got to be her best friend. But I got to be able to see her defects because I have the same defects. You worried about your esteem and your confidence and your worth? Do this work. And all of a sudden, you start doing 12-step work, 11-step work, and something starts building and growing with you, and your posture changes, and your eyes clear up, and you can stand in front of people. And I'm never nervous. I'm not one of them speakers who say, well, I'm just nervous. I'm not nervous because I'm in a room full of drunks. And plus, I think I'm funny, so I think if nothing else, if I can get you to give. Now, if you sat there and looked at me, which I have had that, I'm like, oh, God, this group. But it's okay. And I think that the ladies love me because I've exposed all of me, my good and my not so good. My beliefs, when I discover something new or God puts something in my head, I'll be like, girl, let me tell you what I found out. They'd be like, what, girl? I said, check it, you know? I want to be approachable. I don't want you to be afraid to tell me about that boyfriend that dumped you one more time. Then I get to tell you a dump story. I do a fifth step because in the fifth step in the 12 and 12, it says, highly spiritually developed people insist on spiritual guidance. Insist. So that means Gandhi must have had an advisor. Mother Teresa had to have an advisor. Martin Luther, the king, he had to have an advisor. Some of these people in office and whatever, they have to have advisors, whether they listen to them or not. That means what makes me think I can think this way into right behavior? I need to write this way into right behavior. W-R-I-T-E. Then not only that, just because I put it down, I'm not done. Now I got to read it to you. Because they said it comes more honestly and humbly and correct if I'm sitting telling you myself eye to eye. See, what I call myself and what my sponsor has been for me, I say gap standers. See, my sponsor stands in the gap and acts in the middle as the listener for the beloved God. See, every time I do a fifth step, I pray. We pray together where I'm listening to one or where I'm telling one. Because I'm inviting the Most High, and I told you, he likes to be invited into the party. And there goes. And sometimes it's so much heaviness, and I did my first inventory. It was so much heaviness that I did exactly what they said to do. Because if I'm looking, it says, The reason why I tell another person face-to-face, on Zoom or whatever you got to do, is because I can be humbled by looking Miss Vivian in the eye and telling her. See, my magic magnifying mind, see, I ain't got to see God, so I can tell him anything. People that tell me, God told me, my sponsor, Betty T, the psych nurse, told me. She said, when they say God told you, told them, she said, can you ask them what God sounded like? And if they have an answer for that, tell them, ask them, did they take the psych meds? See, because for me, God might do a little whisper every now and then, but God comes in signs and wonders. It might be through the growth of you or that newcomer I picked up who couldn't manage and couldn't think right and couldn't get it together. I've even gotten some girls and I'm like, you know what? You're a lazy thinker. You always want to be the first to raise your hand to share and jump up there and share. And then you fumble and you bumble. I say, you're lazy. I said, well, I want you to sit down and pray. If you want to share, you sit down, you pray, and ask God for the right thought, word, action, and deed. Get your thoughts together about the topic at hand and make sense. Because we're all sitting there on a Zoom meeting going, what did she just talk about? Confused. I said, no, you don't feel like thinking, so you just want that attention for whatever reason. I said, I'll give you that attention, but what's the purpose of you sharing, baby? Oh, I don't play. And they love it. Because I make them feel fine, and I make them feel happy, and I make them feel I'm not the only one. I'm a novice at this thing. I always got to have somebody to talk to. I always got to have somebody to share my stuff with. I've even used my own sponsees. I got a 4-year-old who's on fire. I said, let me run this past you. What you think about this? And I listened to what she has to say. That's a good perspective. I'll think about that. I'm not too big for this program where you can't tell me nothing. But I'm careful about who I share my stuff with. I went through a period I was telling too much to everybody, and then I was mad because I was giving them the rocks to throw. Everybody don't understand some of the things you do that they may not have done. And after I did the fifth step, and every time, I do that 1 hour quiet contemplation. And then here comes the tears. Today when I say a prayer of gratitude, I thank God for tear ducts because I can still cry. I thank God for heartbeats because I can still love. I thank God for the vision to see that I need to constantly upkeep it. I'm like a Ferrari, baby. Somebody could give, I give Steve a red Ferrari to match his glasses, baby, and here's the keys and the pink slip. Steve come back to me with the Ferrari about 3 years later, talking about, here's the keys, it don't run good. I said, well, why is it running like this? It's missing, it's popping, the muffler ain't right. I said, well, did you at least rotate the tires? Nope. Did you change the oil? Nope. Did you do? Nope. You didn't do no maintenance on it? Nope. That's why the Ferrari fell apart. Our lives are platinum. You got to polish gold, silver, and platinum every now and then. And every now and then, I get a little raggedy. I feel it in my soul space. And I say, I feel weird. And there's something about the conscious contact with God. Now it's with me. I can tell when I'm off-centered. And sometimes I just call my sponsor and I tell her, I don't feel right. And by the time we finish the conversation, we've determined you haven't done a 10-step. How's your meditation doing? How's your prayer? That's later on. I just wanted to narrow this into my fourth and fifth step experience. Because when I move aside the garbage and I wrap it up, I got a space for you to come in and got a space for him to come in. And then I glow from the inside out. You can't help but see the God in me. I don't want to come in and just be a person sitting in a chair. I want to change the atmosphere. That's a lot. But to whom much is given, much is required. So I hope I opened up a few ideas in your head. And if you disagree, that's good. I hope I created a riot in your soul that you want to get this thing and you want to get better and you want to get some worth and some value and nothing with self in front of it. And it's just all God-given because once it's solid and it's done and the foundation is done by God, then maybe you can grow a whole house of love and invitation to all who come your way. They'll see you and they'll float towards you. It's amazing. My name is Leslie Strange, and I'm an alcoholic.